Hey everybody, my name is Isaac Drew. This is the Hillside Ventures podcast, and with me I have the STEM Fund as guest today. A little bit of background about the STEM Fund. They are part of Hillside Ventures, but within Hillside we have two funds, the Genesis Fund and now newly the STEM Fund. And with me I have two guests here, Joe Roberts and Nicholas Janus. I'll have them introduce themselves over here.
Yeah, so I could start us off. Hey, how's it going everyone? Joseph Roberts. I'm a senior finance major here at the University of Connecticut, and you know, I'll rewind things a bit back. Transferred here last year, fall 2022, coming from a community school down in New Haven, Connecticut called Gateway. But as I'm going through the transfer process, I see Hillside Ventures as one of the great organizations here, and you know, I took a jab at it, applied, got in during the spring semester, and as I'm coming in, led the sustainability vertical here for 1 year. Since then, closed five deals altogether, all worth $150,000. And since then, I'm leading the STEM Fund with my colleague Nick here. And yeah, it's been a great time. So I'll let him introduce himself next.
Yeah, how you guys doing? So my name's Nick Janus. I'm a senior electrical engineering student at the University of Connecticut. I'll give a little bit of background about me. I was one of those people who always was good at math, enjoyed doing math. I like taking things apart, putting them back together. So I was like, you know what? It makes sense to go be an engineer in college. And I took a couple classes, tried my time around, and realized maybe engineering wasn't the career that I figured I wanted, but I wanted to kind of explore and see what opportunities I could do with engineering. And the first thing I kind of tried my hand at was intellectual property law, which it was fun. I enjoyed it. It really did use my engineering background, and I really didn't want to use the technical background of my engineering degree as much as the analytical side. So I liked the math, but the theory was never something I was super passionate about. So then I decided to switch kind of my course and let's look at the financial careers and more business side, and tried my hand at consulting. I worked for a firm called Accenture, and I did consulting through them, and I enjoyed it. But I didn't think it was analytical enough. I think it was a little bit too big picture for me. So from there, I decided to get involved with Hillside Ventures at UConn and immediately fell in love. I think it's a really interesting area to be, especially when I like to call it like your engineering built businesses. Like the best way to describe what I find as Hillside Ventures is we're taking companies that either need funding or that we are really passionate about, and we're helping engineer them into becoming hopefully unicorns. But that really, I fell in love with that. And I luckily got an internship after that at an investment manager down in Dallas, Texas. Loved that, loved the analytical nature. And I kind of found my niche of wanting to go work in investment management, hopefully for a private equity firm. And what I really enjoy is just the analytical nature that you get between the business side of venture capital, but also the financial analytics that you have when you're looking at P&Ls, understanding how revenue comes in, how expenses go out, understanding really what drives the growth of a business. I really found a love for looking at that on the early stage all the way to the late stage of business.
Wow, you guys have a very long background and especially a lot of experiences. It's great to hear about that. So I just want to talk about, you know, your guys' involvement in Hillside. You know, you guys definitely left a good track record here. And I just wanted to know why you guys decided to create the STEM Fund. Like, what kind of motivated you guys to do that? What did you guys see happening for UConn when you guys created the STEM Fund?
Yeah, well, starting at that ideation phase and backing up to fall 2022, I remember Greg, Professor Riley, came into the classroom and, you know, he was talking about how he was chatting with his brother back in Michigan about what he was doing at these commercialization consulting agencies and working with them. So he brought the idea to us, and another one of our former members, Sean Macri, who was involved as well, coming up with the idea of commercializing such technology, but specifically at these large universities and research-oriented universities such as UConn. So, you know, you would have these PhD students or even senior undergrads coming up with their thesis that, you know, could be a $1 billion idea. But unfortunately, once that project is done, once it's submitted for a grade, they shelf it and are never able to bring that idea back out and develop it and go through the stages of seed to, you know, eventually IPO. But not even just the financial returns, but the benefits that this idea will have for society. So whether it be anything in green tech, education, technology, you know, there are very early ideas out there that should be funded. So with that, we've created the STEM Fund, and, you know, we could talk more on that end of the details on it. But, you know, one of the things we're experimenting now with is non-dilutive capital. So originally with the Genesis Fund, like you mentioned, you know, we're investing into different vehicles, whether it be a convertible note, a safe, or a price round. But, you know, with the non-dilutive capital now, we're able to look at, say, a UConn company who's coming out of an accelerator, whether it be CCEI or Worth, and we could hand them, you know, between $1,000 to $5,000 and non-dilutive capital, and at the same time de-risking that company from failures further on in the process. So when we initially do or eventually go out to invest our $25,000, $50,000 usual check size into them, that company is de-risked due to the grants. But since then, we've been looking for STEM students, and I would say we've done a great job of recruiting some top tier talent across all the STEM sciences and backgrounds. But I'll let Nick tap in more about how he's been working with the School of Engineering and making it happen.
Yeah, I'll give a little bit of context, kind of what led to this idea. We mentioned Sean McCary earlier, and I just want to give a shout out to him because he was the other engineer who was kind of integral in creating this, we'll call it the STEM Fund. And he was really helpful in kind of qualifying the perspective that I had, where we think that there's a lot of engineers out there who may not feel like the career of engineering is their fit, and there's a lot of different career avenues that they can go. And he was one of those that we think he actually fell in love with the venture side when he joined Hillside Ventures. So that kind of gave us a little qualification at the beginning to say, like, okay, what can we build from here? And that immediately went us to talk to people in the industry. I think a lot of us have a pretty big networks within venture themselves. And what we learned is when we're talking to other venture capitalists and capital allocators, one of the most dynamic groups that you can get from a founding team, but beyond a founding team, is just people working in the workforce, is an engineer with a technical background and a business student or someone with a business background working together to solve a problem. Both of them bring an analytical nature. However, the technical knowledge that the engineering or the, we're open to all STEM students, it's not just engineering. I'm just using engineering because it's my background. Gives you one way of looking at a problem, and the business experience gives you another way. And actually the intersection between those do a really good job of getting you across the entire landscape of the thinking process when looking at diligence in companies and finding companies. And there's also a lot of innovation that occurs when you take a business student and an engineering student together. You get a lot of knowledge on if the inventions or the companies are technically sound, but also we throw this term around a lot, venture backable, are able to put money in and see exponential growth from the start. So we really learned through a lot of research and a lot of conversations that that's a really dynamic duo. And we felt that although it's students and they're not professionals with PhDs or master's degrees, we're all undergrads, there is a strong knowledge of engineering and business students of financial markets, how to allocate capital, but also like my experience, there's a knowledge of signals and systems, power systems, microprocessors, and you can kind of keep going. Everybody has their niche. Biomedical engineers, you have a specialization of like tissue engineering or prosthetics. There's a lot to go in depth with, and you know a really strong amount even at the undergraduate level. So what this allows you to do is really source companies that you know enough about to understand immediately if the technology is even feasible. And from that aspect, when we built out the fund, our whole hope was taking this dynamic duo and immediately increasing the speed that the diligence process is done. We don't need to do two or three meetings with the founder to get, you know, bring on a technical person down the road because one of the business students found the company. It's a dynamic duo, two people on every call, one from the business background, one from the engineering background, and that really gives us a strong place to build. And I'll let Joe kind of speak to the success of the semester so far, but we have 10 students in the STEM Fund, and we've been sourcing companies since August, and it's, in my opinion at least, been a fantastic experience as of now.
Yeah. You know, words can't explain, you know, we have our tailwinds going into this and also the headwinds. And, you know, I could talk about recruiting being an interesting process for anyone in general, you know, either for the Genesis Fund, STEM Fund, or, you know, any organization, I see the headaches that it may cause, but, you know, trying to find the top talent and as well as spreading the access to the resources available through the Management Entrepreneurship Office and what you get through Hillside. You know, there's nothing like this, especially at a public university where you get to talk face to face with a CEO, CFO, the whole C-suite of, you know, startups that could eventually become these unicorns, such as the likes of Uber and Airbnb, which, you know, hopefully is in our portfolio right now. But again, it's like no other. But, you know, on top of that, balancing the work associated with this, you know, I know we tell a bunch of new analysts coming in that we expect 5 to 10 hours of good work from you. But, you know, since I joined Hillside, I would say this has become almost a full-time job. And, you know, trying the best to spread this, you know, outside of the School of Business, which we've done a good job as, hence the STEM Fund where we're at now, and, you know, to other schools as well, whether it be NEAC or anybody who's undecided, just trying to get them in there and showing you that there is a place in the world and venture can be that for you. So, yeah.
I love that you hit on, like, the fact that, and I think it's really expressed a lot in these podcasts and just every day in the fund, is that this is an incredible opportunity for students to get real world experience and the experiential learning. And I think with the STEM Fund, and Joe touched upon this a little bit, is really awesome, is that we're giving students who don't have exposure on the day-to-day basis the experience in venture to realize maybe this is a career path for me. Just last class, we spoke a little bit about people's resumes, what they want to be doing after we graduate, or, you know, internships. And I think we had 4 or 5 different of the engineering students or the technical students say, like, I actually want to pursue a career in venture, which is something fantastic, because in my time at UConn, and I think a lot of other students have this experience within the School of Engineering or CLS, if they're a math student or a statistics student, is they don't really get broadcasted as venture capital, or even just like a capital allocation career is something that's in the cards. It's just not the goal career for a lot of the programs, and entirely rightfully so. It's really a bit out there. However, if you look at like the basic skill base that's used in every career, engineering makes a fantastic foundation, as does natural sciences, as does anything with an analytical background. They make a fantastic basis for venture. So I think it's really awesome that we're creating this opportunity for students, especially with technical backgrounds, to look at careers that may not have been broadcast to them from the university or their programs, their advisors, and it's really awesome.
Yeah. So you guys mentioned earlier about unicorns and companies that you guys, you know, wish to have in your portfolio. You guys mentioned also Uber, which took advantage of a stagnant market that needed a lot of innovation, and Airbnb, a similar situation. What kind of trends are you guys looking at in the STEM Fund, and what are you guys hoping to take advantage of? You guys have any companies in mind currently?
Well, some trends, you know, when I do my venture approach, I do both top down and bottom up. I'll start with top down. You know, early stage venture, you know, a lot of the macroeconomics, whether you talk about inflation and interest rates, really don't affect that market. You'll usually see that in a later stage, companies that are going to IPO, and, you know, these late stage VC firms, albeit, you know, the multi funds, Sequoia, Insight, A16Z, Tiger, you know, they're looking to dress these companies up to be prepped for the public markets and be profitable as, you know, shareholders are coming in, whether it be giant mutual funds like Vanguard and iShares. So it's a different side of that. When you're early stage, you're more on the qualitative side, as Nick mentioned, specifically for STEM. You know, we're looking at the background of these founders. If we're looking at something in neuroscience, we're looking, you know, for a psych background or, you know, internship experience or PhD experience in their field. And then working, you know, the opposite side of that, going bottom up, you know, working there from the team, really not much on the traction side, albeit, you know, it's great supplemental research. You know, I'll leave that for the Genesis Fund with them. You know, a lot of the companies in that portfolio have generated revenues or on track to, but here it's strictly pre-revenue and, you know, just getting to the bottom of that founder and their intuition of whether or not they're doing this for the product and actually trying to change lives of individuals, whether it's for the customer, for the business, for the government, or if they're in here solely for an exit and a quick cash out, because, you know, we've come across that, and, you know, something we try to avoid as much as possible. But, you know, in terms of research, I'm still working on the climate side of things pertaining to the circular economy. I know I didn't mention at the beginning of the show, but I've had an internship at Connecticut Innovations. It's CT's venture capital arm, and did a lot of studies in the circular economy and insurtech within climate tech. So still looking at studies on that, market research, and how it could be applicable up here at UConn as well. You know, looking for startups that can partner with the university. You know, one that's still on the top of my mind is getting these food halls and anaerobic digester that could easily convert all this food waste, whether into fertilizer for the surrounding crops or turning into biogas to help, you know, for energy, whether it be for heating or for power. So, you know, bunch of cool research out there and still digging through.
Yeah, I'll go a little bit into kind of the trends I'm looking to participate in. I'll go a little bit bigger too and just kind of what am I looking for when I'm looking for companies and trying to see if I think it's a really good investment. And this is a personal, I think, opinion on a lot of different people, like what they're looking for. I care a lot about the founder. I think looking at what the founder's done, if they have a past of execution, if they've always had an entrepreneurial spirit, gives me a lot of trust that they can execute. Of course, you want to look at the product that they're making and understand if the market's strong and if you think the revenues are there and if you think that they can expand and grow. But I think a lot of trust with these pre-revenue companies is with the founder. I think the founders will be the one who know the industry best. And we don't have the luxury of being a large multi-stage fund that has people 2 years out of their PhD program who know a very small sector very well. We're students who know sectors maybe an inch deep. So what we have to do is really trust on our expert networks to give us the knowledge that we need to see if what founders are saying is accurate. But one of the greatest green flags I find is founders who have a absolutely incredible track record of execution and founders who have an entrepreneurial background. And then with that, it also leads me to talk about like why I think the founder is the most important person, because I think a lot of the biggest companies you see nowadays were actually just pivots from their first image. There's really great examples. Airbnb, eBay all had an initial mission and then at some point hit a wall or had some genius idea to say, oh wait, this maybe is in our core business. We have another really great idea that we can pivot into. And I think that's really up to the founder and the early development business team to take those ideas and be able to turn a business on a dime. And I really trust in the space that we're looking at founder's ability to execute as like the top priority. Now, if we're going a little bit into trends, I'm going back a little bit in my internship experience where I worked at a real estate firm down in Dallas, a place called Hillwood. They do industrial real estate acquisitions, but through that, I got really involved in the real estate, we'll call it landscape. And I've really found real estate's a traditional market in the United States and in globally speaking. And there's not a lot of digital tech innovation in the real estate space. You can see in like 2010, 2015, and now even more so 2023, the idea of prop tech and construction technology as like emerging areas for venture capitalists to be investing into and growth capital firms, even private equity firms. But it wasn't really big until the last, I think, 20 years. And even that, you look at some of the innovation that's going on, and it's some pretty small scale, nothing and too crazy in terms of like they're figuring out better ways to manage efficiency of warehouses or manage rental portfolios. And there's nothing that's really strongly analytics based. And that's really what I'm looking at, taking real estate and finding ways to gather data about markets, properties, debt financing on some of these properties, and kind of put it out to the market and so people can use it to analyze. That's the trend I'm looking for, is the data-driven play in a traditional space.
Mm. Well, thank you guys for that. wanted to talk about, you guys are obviously multiple semester members of Hillside Ventures, and you guys have been involved through numerous ways, particularly your due diligence and investing in companies. I wanted to ask you guys, you know, of the numerous companies you've invested in, which one was your favorite one and why?
Oh, man. Let's see. I mean, I'm automatically going to go to my number one vote post, you know, So I'll give a quick background on the company and, you know, our due diligence process on that. But Volpost, EV charging company, you know, you have these other incumbents in the area that are more focused on commercial lots, gas stations, and residential homes, where a lot of people can't afford the luxury of buying an EV charger for their Tesla or a hybrid vehicle. But what Volpost is doing, they're more focused in these metropolitan areas. So say New York City, Boston, Chicago, San Francisco, all areas where they're working at right now. They're latching on EV charging post to lamppost in order to democratize the access for individuals living in these cities. So, you know, like I mentioned, going back to the residential home, someone who can't afford that, who's now living in a city, they can park, charge their hybrid or fully EV vehicle. They have level two through three chargers, so DC fast charging to get you up and on the road again. And, you know, it's been a great success for them. They just won first place in the Plug and Play Detroit Challenge. And again, they're executing on all sides, which I wish I can disclose. But nonetheless, Volpost was a great diligence experience for me. Mainly, specifically, you know, you look to see what differentiates companies. And, you know, you look at all these EV charging companies and, you know, they use the same design. They use the same chargers. What's the greatest play around them? But a lot of it, what a lot of people don't see is the real estate value behind this. And I would say Tesla has been a great participant in this. I think it was a couple months ago or maybe a year ago, they inked a contract with Ford, and Ford is now using a bunch of Tesla's chargers. So at the end of the day, if you're able to place these chargers in specific major areas, where in the future we are going to start seeing this adoption, it's just eventual, you will see these large players who are able to gain a concentration, vote post in these metropolitan areas, and ink deals with any other of these EV car producing companies, whether it be Ford, GM, you name it, who are looking to be in these areas and, you know, getting their name on notice. But that's my number one. I will go on about Good Wives, but that's another story for another time.
Yeah. See, that's a good question. I don't think I have a number one, and it's not because I don't have favorites. But it's because I think in Hillside, we really have the thesis that if we don't absolutely love a company and if it's not our number one, it's not going in our portfolio. So I think that, like, I'll give you, maybe you can call it a cop-out answer. Maybe you call it a good answer. It's entirely up to you.
It's an answer.
Yeah. I think every company in our portfolio is my favorite company because each of them have their own interesting challenges, but also their own interesting value adds. There's a lot of different companies where they've contracted our help to understand the market or understand if a current, you know, new business proposition is what's in their cards versus if they should decide to expand a product line or if they want to grow or raise another round. And I think all the problems that you're getting from every company that is in our portfolio just give you such an interesting nuance that I couldn't pick a favorite because each one could be my favorite that week, where we have incredible companies in battery technology and natural refrigerants all the way over to we have learning platforms. And the beauty of Hillside is that we have so many students in it and so many analysts that we get to invest in a lot of different areas and a lot of different industries. And I couldn't pick one company that's my favorite because I think everything has something interesting about it.
Mm, yeah. And going on to the bigger picture about, you know, UConn and as a community whole, I know we were trying to, you know, recruiting process of getting more students involved on campus. But a lot of students don't even know about venture capital or don't believe they have the necessary skill sets to belong in this industry. You know, without that typical background, what kind of skills do you think they should have? So let's say someone is a teacher and wants to be involved in venture capital. How could they try to make that, you know, that transition into this industry?
Man, the biggest, you know, questions that I get when talking to new applicants and, you know, not even applicants, just discussing Hillside with them is, I don't have the financial background. I don't have the business acumen. I'm not able to do this. And it's just completely false, whether it be for undergrads, for any professionals, graduates. You know, I'll just go for Hillside first and we can expand on venture in general. But, you know, for Hillside, we're looking for qualities, behavioral qualities from individuals rather than your quantitative experience or background, whether it be a you know, GPA or any crazy internship you have. You know, at the end of the day, I look at VC as you are an entrepreneur. And to be a great entrepreneur, you have to put the time and effort in and the grit for that. It's more mentality over anything than your quantitative skills. So one thing I would say is great leadership, a great background in leadership. So whether you're at a club, you're on your e-board there, or if you're on a sports team and, you know, you're one of the team captains there, bringing that more specifically to Genesis, you know, seeing they have their structure with different vertical leads, you know, bringing that and coaching students and, you know, along the way as you develop your VC skills, putting that back on to your new analysts that are coming in and having them quickly adapt to what's going on. And teamwork as well has to go into a lot of this. You can be the great individual who could crunch numbers, you know, all late night, but you know, once it gets to that investment board meeting and you're not on the same page as your teammates in regarding to who's doing what, or, you know, everything just gets lost in the process there. So always being on the same page and communicating is another great skill we seek from students. You're talking face to face for 30 minutes to an hour with different startup founders. You're going to different conferences, meeting different individuals, whether it be a donor or an investment board member. You know, you have to be able to communicate this and talk intellectually about your experiences. But overall, venture, you know, whatever background you come from, let's say you're an administrator at a school, right? And you know, you're noticing retention rates are starting to go down for those students. So, you know, looking for ways to solve that, and you know, you have an expertise of how to retain them. So, you know, I know for UConn, we have something called UContact, I believe. And, you know, that's a way you get to see what organizations, what clubs, what events are happening on. But, you know, there's nothing that really is, how can you say, retaining these students in difference with, all right, chop that one off, hit that recording. Yeah. And then pertaining to individuals who are already full out, blown out into their careers, getting into venture, you know, you already have the technical experience, you have that technical background. You know, we can use an engineer, for example, in computer science or mechanical engineering. You know, you have the acumen, the academic background to know how to deal with certain technical problems in your industry. So, you know, whether it be working in green tech, you know, like I mentioned before, with the circular economy and helping out in trends like that, you don't have to have a business background for it. You know, you could learn a bunch of this on your own time, whether it be chopping up numbers on, you know, different platforms that prepare you for this. So easy way to explain it.
Yeah, I'll answer this a little bit differently. As someone who didn't know a single thing about venture capital, how do you do it? How do you get in? It's an excellent question. So I'll give you what I did, and it doesn't work for everybody. And I think that's the story that I've learned through, I don't know, 150 networking calls, that there is no like really strong way that, you know, you do this, you do this, you do this, Sequoia will hire you. That's just not how it works. For me, what I did is I luckily had a friend in the Genesis Fund who said, you should join Hillside Ventures. And I said, I don't really know anything about venture capital. I don't really think that's, you know, my thing. I'm an engineer, like did consulting. Like, I don't think there's a lot of symmetry there, but I'll take a look at it. And, you know, the very first thing is that I did is you just start reading like the Wall Street Journal, and you start reading, oh, that's what venture capital is investing in. And like, oh, that's the type of investments that they're making. Oh, they're doing earlier stage. This is really interesting. And then what I did is I talked to UConn alumni. We had Hillside Ventures for about 2 years before I joined. So there's plenty of Hillside alumni to reach out to and say like, hey, I'm curious about joining Hillside Ventures and I'd love to know your experience a little bit about it. Now it's funny because some of these guys that I networked with before joining the fund, I ended up, I wouldn't say being forced. It was suggested I network with again after joining the fund to understand what I got myself into. But they gave me a lot of insight on like if this is for me and if I enjoy it. And at that point I was like, oh, I love this. But again, we're at that point where, you know, I know a lot about venture capital, like widely, but nothing really too in-depth about anything in venture capital. So this is like a method that I've been doing since I think it was like freshman year of high school, is I go down to CVS. I bought a brand new notebook, 500-page notebook, and I find two or three textbooks that I think are really interesting on venture capital. Usually I go on the internet and Google, what are the best venture capital textbooks? What are the best private equity textbooks? And I, you know, read a couple, and whatever one engages me the most that I think is fascinating, I just write, and I start writing it down, and I start writing everything I can figure it out. So you start, some of these textbooks start about like the variation of what investing is across seed versus pre-seed versus series A, B, C, all the way to pre-IPO and IPOing. And then they get deeper and deeper into how you value companies in seed, how you value companies as series A. And then you even get deeper, which what are term sheets? First of all, what are term sheets? But then second of all, like what are the actual like lines in a term sheet saying? Liquidation preferences, equity clawbacks, which you get really into the weeds through just reading textbooks on this, which is a little bad at some points when you're about four pages deep on some content and you're like, I really have no idea what I've read for the last, you know, four pages. And luckily, you know, you have a big network here that you can ask, like, hey, you have experience like diligencing software companies versus a startup that doesn't manufacture their own project product. What is your experience been doing this? Like, I read about this in a textbook that you're going to have a lot of different valuation procedures across different companies. Like, can you explain this out a little bit? And any question I'd have, you'd write it down, you ask, and I'd ask somebody who's an expert. So that's how I kind of got up to speed with venture and realized that it was a career. And I think that's kind of how a lot of people structurally do it, is they hear something in passing, they do a little bit of research on it. It's like, oh, that piqued my interest a little bit. You talk to people, and then you fall in love, and you absolutely absorb your life with it.
Wow. You guys are definitely doing something amazing here on the UConn campus. And, you know, as we're all, in case you guys haven't, we haven't mentioned this, we are all currently seniors, so we're gonna be graduating soon. And I just wanted to talk about your vision for the STEM Fund and what you guys want to leave with your legacy here at UConn.
I don't even want to start with the STEM Fund. I think just overall for Hillside Ventures, you know, we can't say STEM without saying the overarching name brand of everything. But, you know, I want to give this experience to individuals who wouldn't get it going to a public university, especially me coming from a community school background. You know, coming straight to here, I had no idea what I wanted to do. I had no idea of the career path. And coming to Hillside has definitely helped shape that for me with the internship backgrounds, the people I've met. So, you know, going out to different communities, different clubs, and continuing to spread the word of what Hillside does. You know, we talk a lot about the returns that we expect. We want a $1 billion company, but that's really not the end goal for this fund, this organization that we have. It's developing the skills needed for you to go into your career, whether it be soft or hard skills that you're able to learn here as well. Again, my lasting vision is just, you know, don't be afraid, you know, get uncomfortable in every situation. It's only going to develop you more. You know, I'll never forget going into my first investment board meeting, and I talked to everybody going into theirs now, new analysts, that, you know, it's better to do it now than never, obviously, but, you know, easier said than done. But again, going to my first one was nervous, sweating, reading the script word from word on, you know, what to say to these individuals. But again, it's a learning experience. They want nothing for the best for you. Same as me, all new analysts, all new applicants, you're going to make hiccups in the process, but it's all for the better of you. And again, one last thing is to pass it on to others. So after I graduate, the next up-and-coming Hillside analyst, whoever it may be, pass it on to the next. So that's my last.
Yeah, I'll give like my lasting vision, what I hope this turns into. I'll talk about first, I think, what I hope this turns into is just a way for students to realize that there's opportunities out there that may not always be broadcasted to them, and to just stay curious in terms of the opportunities that may come your way. The way that I kind of have taken my experience at UConn is just kind of saying yes. Like anytime somebody's like, hey, do you want to do this? Yes. Do you want to do this? Yes. Although it's gotten me into a pretty tough time and scheduling crunch, it's been a fantastic experience to learn what I like and what I don't like. And now I think most of my days are filled with things that I've said yes to that I love. So what I'd like Hillside to turn into is people who are just taking extra opportunity that they didn't know was out there and saying yes to taking the risk of learning a little bit about venture and figuring out if it's something for them. what I'd like to see the STEM fund be in 5 years is full of engineers, full of finance students, full of business students, math students, statistics students, anything you could imagine, political science, agriculture, anybody at UConn. I hope it's filled with so many different majors and so many different experiences that you're getting every single semester a fresh experience and a fresh vision on all these problems. I'm also hoping that, you know, 5 years out, and I'll even say 50 years out, when I'm 70 years old, that if there is a STEM fund still, they're doing a networking call with me saying like, hey, you were in the STEM fund back when you were at the University of Connecticut. What was your experience like that like? And it's just, I think the strongest thing that's really helped Hillside Ventures out is the alumni and the alumni involvement and the people who care beyond the students. Because that's really where a lot of us got our start, is getting alumni who are just nice enough to talk to us and nice enough to kind of tell us what we may or may not need to know. And from there, I think it's the goal is just to have every alumni as involved as possible in advising every single student in Hillside Ventures.
Wow, thank you. I share all of your visions too with Hillside, and just trying to leave that legacy for other people to try new opportunities. This episode is coming to a close. Once again, thank you guys for coming out here to speak to the podcast. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having us.
Yep. If any listeners have any questions, please don't hesitate to reach out to me on LinkedIn. My name is Isaac Duru, or I have my two guests here, Joseph Roberts and Nick Janus. They are also very helpful. If you have any questions, please reach out to them. We are very eager to help people out. Thank you guys once again for listening. Hope you guys have a good one.